now.
I don't know who he is behind that mask of his, but I do know when we need him. And we need him now.
I'll call him, sir.
For some reason, cool bars in Hollywood have to be hard to find and have to have no sign.
This is the Cocktail Nation.
Well, lots of industrial action going on in Australia these days. We've had quite a few large companies closed down, lots of strikes. All I can say is, employees, if your employer gets up your nose, pick it. This week on the show, we talked to Luxuria Music DJ and personality Audrey Moorhead, who happens to be a collector of one of the most influential designers of the 50s. We'll take a look at a movie about Marilyn Monroe, some Mad Men Season 5 gossip, and some good news on the growth of the Cocktail Nation. That's all coming up tonight, and here's H.B. Radke, Live Until I Die.
And we're cruising. Jet City swingers, man, we're boozing. Don't you go and be a schmo. Relax, enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the refreshment room. It's time to bring to the stage a man who says he'll get married as soon as he can find a woman like Hillary Clinton. H.B. Radke.
I'm gonna live till I die. Gonna laugh instead of cry. Gonna take the town and turn it upside down. I'm gonna live, live, live until I die. They're gonna say, oh, what a guy. Gonna play for the sky. Ain't gonna miss a thing. I'm gonna have my fling. I'm gonna live, live, live until I die. The blues I'll lay low. I'll make them stay low. They'll never trail over my head. I'll be a devil till I'm an angel. But until then, hallelujah. Gonna dance, gonna fly. Take a chance, riding high. Until my number's up, I'm gonna fill my cup. I'm gonna live until I die. Here we go! The blues I'll lay low, I'll make them stay low. They'll never trail over my head. I'll be a devil till I'm an angel. But until then, hallelujah. Gonna dance, gonna fly. Take a chance, riding high. Until my number's up, I'm gonna fill my cup. I'm gonna live, live, live until I die.
The Cocktail Nation, thanks to ultraswank.net.
Thank you.
Nation, thanks to ultraswank.net and lounge leader Cube Cooper with you. With one from the OS-117 movie Lost in Rio, a song by Ludwig Buss from the soundtrack Rio Magic. Tonight I'm joined by LA personality, DJ and collector Audrey Moorhead, who hosts the very popular radio show Switched on Audrey on Luxuria Music. Audrey also happens to be a collector of the designs of Rudi Gernreich. Now, Rudi was born in Vienna, fled to Austria at the age of 16 due to Nazism, and later migrated to the United States, settling in Los Angeles. Audrey, tell us how he became one of the most influential designers of the 50s and 60s.
Well, he escaped Austria with his mother. His mother saw the signs that the Nazis were coming and escaped to America. I believe he was 13 years old, 9 or 13 years old. The number escapes me right now. But and they came to Los Angeles, and then he found work as a mortician's assistant. This is a story that I was told. I haven't been able to verify it. And then he became interested in dance and joined the Lester Horn dance troupe and was kind of dabbling with designs there, because when, as a child, he would go to his aunt's dress shop, and he loved to be in the dress shop, and he loved watching his aunt make clothing. So that's, it started at a very early age for him to be interested in designing. And then because of the dance troupe and, you know, trying to make costumes, he realized that clothes needed to have movement, and he started loving the idea of designing clothing. And in that time, when he was around the Lester Horn period, he had met a man named Harry Hay, who he became involved with and started the, I can never pronounce it right, the, it's not Machismo Society, it's the Machina Society. It's the gay society for that was started in the 40s for men, the first gay society.
Yeah, it's
and he never came out. I mean, his sexuality was not something that he needed to announce to the world or anything like that. He was always very, you know, discreet about that, because at the time you were arrested for walking down the street for being gay. In fact, Rudi had been arrested just because he was walking home from the bus. So, and after this period, he became a co-designer with Walter Bass, who was also from Austria, and he had a partnership with him for about 8 years. And then people were clamoring to get his designs for his swimsuits. Construction was taken out of the swimsuits, and he ended his partnership with Walter Bass and went on to do his own label.
Tell us a little bit about. Let's skip through to the 1950s, when he's become a clothing designer. Let's talk about some of the interesting things that he came up with. I suppose the one that he's probably most well known for is the first topless swimsuit, or the monokini.
Yes, he was. That is his most famous design, but it's by far not the most important thing that he did. There are so many firsts that he did, and one of them is, in the 50s, you had all these construction in the swimsuits, like boning, and you had, panties, and you had built-in bras, because, contrary to popular belief, women were not built better in the 1950s. They also had small breasts and body issues then as well. And so they used to build these built-in bras into the swimsuit, so it made you look like Jane Mansfield. And he thought it was so uncomfortable, and women complained that it was uncomfortable. And it wasn't real. That's not the way women are shaped. And so he took the construction out of them so that women could swim and feel comfortable without all this extra baggage inside of the swimsuit. And that seems like such a revolutionary thing at the time, and we take it for granted today, because we have these ultra thin swimsuits now that are built for speed, and doesn't matter that you don't have breasts or they pad them sometimes, but it was just about making women feel comfortable and have movement without feeling stiff. And he would say, if you wear a girdle, it doesn't make you look any slimmer. it just makes you look ill at ease. And it's true. If you see some of these girls, like in our sort of counterculture retro scene, and you see these girls with corsets from the burlesque scene or in the 50s scene, and you see them all gussied up, they don't look very comfortable. But the girls in the 60s scene, all, you know, they're not wearing girdles and so forth, and they look a lot more comfortable, and then they dance a lot more freely, because again, the dance comes into his designs, where he wanted movement and freedom and comfort, and Rudy's credo was comfort.
You happen to be the reason we got you on the show tonight is because you're an incredible collector of his materials, and I came across this fact because you recently had a showing of some of his pieces, didn't you?
Yes. I bought my first Rudy about 25 years ago from a girlfriend of mine. She went to a vintage clothing fair, and she came back with a black zip-up dress and a yellow zip-up dress, and I don't remember what she paid for them. It was nothing. And I traded her for a Betsy Johnson paraphernalia dress. It was too small for me. And that yellow gold tangerine dress with a zipper up the side was my first piece, and it didn't look like anything on the hanger, but boy, when I tried it on, it was magical, and I felt incredibly beautiful and sexy in this simple dress. It wasn't just the cool zipper up the side, it was the amazing bright color, and then the wool dress that conforms to your body, and it's comfortable, and wool breathes. Even if it gets warm, it still breathes. So I was hooked from then on, and I've been, you know, finding pieces here and there, and it's actually really quite hard to find Rudy Gernreich's, because the women that own them love them so much that they didn't get rid of them. They didn't donate them. They didn't, you know, pass them on. They kept them in their closets, and my mom was one of those people. I remember, you know, she's, oh, I remember I bought this Rudy Gernreich, and I was just a child saying, yeah, whatever. You know, she was a size zero. There was no way I was going to fit into them. So I actually got her to donate all of her old clothes like a big idiot. And been so mad ever since. But again, you know, she loved those things that she kept them. And other women that I've spoken to that I've gotten pieces from, I mention it, and they said, oh, I have a Rudy Gernreich. I absolutely adore it. It'll never fit me again. But I just felt so beautiful and so special in that dress. I just hate to part with it. But they know they were giving it to me or selling it to me, and that I would be sharing that and wearing it and getting, you know, giving it new life. So they were willing to part with it to me, which is absolutely crazy. You don't really have loyalty with a lot of other designers. I mean, sometimes Pucci and sometimes Dior and Yves Saint Laurent, but most of the people that we talk to that I've gotten the Rudys from, they were just really reluctant to get rid of it, even though there was no way they'd ever fit into it again. So that's the power of Rudy. It made people feel special, beautiful, sexy, whatever that they wanted to feel, they felt in those dresses.
Audrey, wonderful story. Thank you so much for your time tonight.
Thank you so much.
Kiss her, some boys hug her, she thinks they're okay. If they don't give her proper credit, then she just walks away. Well, they can beg, they can plead, but they can't see the light.
That's right.
So the boy with the cold hard cash is always Mr. Right. 'Cause we're living in a material world, and she's a material girl. 'Cause we're living in a material world, and she's a material girl. Some guys romance, some guys slow dance. Well, that's alright with her. If they can't raise her interest well, she'll have to let them go. Well, some boys try, some boys lie, but she don't let them play, no way. It's only boys that save their pennies can make her rainy day. 'Cause we're living in a mysterious world, she's a material girl. Material world, she's a material girl. may come and boys may go. Well, that's all right, you see. Experience has made her rich, and now she's after me. 'Cause we're living in a material world, and she's a material girl. 'Cause we're living in a material world, and she's a material girl.
This is the Cocktail Nation.
There was a moon out in space, but a cloud drifted over its face. You kissed me and went on your way. The night we called it a day, I heard the song of the spheres, like a minor lament in my ears. I hadn't a heart left to breathe. the night we called it a day. Soft through the dark, root of a night. No bluer was he than I. The moon went down, stars were gone. The sun didn't rise with a dawn. There wasn't a thing left to say. The night we called it a day.
With Coop Cooper, thanks to ultraswank.net, Diana Krall, and The Night We Called It a Day. Well, I've been busy rewatching Mad Men Season 4 in preparation for its Season 5 return. I've been doing some research onto what people are saying about Season 5. And straight from the horse's mouth, and you can't get much better than this, the man who plays Don Draper, John Hamm, says the upcoming season of Mad Men will delve into the relationship that a lot of fans are interested in, but hasn't received a lot of screen time yet. The one between Don Draper and Joan. Now, don't get too excited. John Hamm's comments to Radio Times at the BAFTA event in London don't read as though Joan and Don are going to be getting romantically involved. He says that the Don and Joan dynamic is something that we do explore, but don't take this the wrong way. We do explore this as the show goes on. They've worked together for a long time, and they know one each other, and they know each other very well, and I'll leave it at that. Now, considering Don ended Mad Men's season engaged to Megan, and Joan learned that she was pregnant, that would seem to preclude a romantic relationship. Anyway, well, at least one that might be a little bit more difficult. I guess we'll see. Season 5 of Mad Men premieres March 25 on AMC, and I can't wait for it to come back again. Fresh from the Palm Springs Montanism event, it's the Martini Kings and Bags Groove.
Cocktail Nation. Thank you. $49.50 to spend a few days. I went to Havana to look at the natives, to study their customs, their picturesque ways. In searching for some local color, I ran into a Cuban gent. And he was such a big sensation, I forgot the population. He showed me the city. He taught me his customs. My trip to Havana was quite a success. Cuban made it as they gave the final call. I'm back in the office. I'm punching the time clock. But you can bet my mind is not on my work. Instead of Bacardi, I'm ordering Bromo. Instead of the Cuban, I'm stuck with a clerk. The other girls can go to Europe and marry into royalty, and they can get an earl or pasha or a gent with lots of cash. But when I get married and settle in Brooklyn, he may be a slicker, he may be a hick or a Reuben, but you can bet he'll be a Cuban.
Donation thanks to Ultra Swank Lounge leader Coop Cooper and Monica Mancini with the Weekend of a Private Secretary. In Review with Coop, a new movie about Marilyn Monroe this week. What was Marilyn Monroe really like? Well, 100 biographies couldn't really give a final answer, and we probably don't want one. The Marilyn paradox endures. Not many movie stars have seemed so artificial yet so emotionally raw. The latest tribute is a movie directed by British theatre veteran Simon Curtis in the updated telemovie style, The King's Speech. It's all about a diary kept by the aspiring filmmaker Colin Clark on the set of Prince and the Showgirl from 1957 in London. A romantic comedy that strangely paired the insecure Monroe, played by Michelle Williams, with the fearfully distinguished Sir Laurence Olivier. Their behind-the-scenes struggle seems like a surefire commercial gain, combining the vogue of British stuffiness with the always enticing spectacle of a celebrity train wreck. On a slightly more elevated level, the film does stage a contest between the two notions of acting. Laurence Olivier's dedication to the craft versus Monroe's instinct for truth and perhaps professional sloppiness. No prizes for guessing who comes out ahead. It is well worth checking out. It's in cinemas right now. It's the new film, My Week with Marilyn Monroe. Swank advice tonight on wearing sports shoes to work. It's amazing how many people I see walking the streets of Sydney getting to work in business wear and sports shoes. Ugh. In their briefcase, they carry their dress shoes put on when they get to work. Whilst the walk to work might be more comfortable in sports shoes, it really is quite ridiculous. How far are you really walking that you can't put up with heels or dress shoes? I've often wondered how people must feel when they run into their boss, a colleague, a client, or perhaps a member of the opposite sex that they'd like to impress. There really is nothing worse than trainers to ruin a perfectly good business attire. And I suppose, well, actually, there probably is one other thing. Men who wear business attire with a baseball cap because they have to go out in the sun and they've got no hair on their head and they want to protect themselves from skin cancer. That always looks bad. Buy a fedora, please. So in this week's Swank Advice, my suggestion to you, if you've fallen for the popular trend of wearing sports shoes to work, is to ditch them and get back to dress shoes. It really isn't that bad. And let's face it, how far can you possibly be walking to work? I will concede that if you do have a long walk to work, maybe to the train, you could choose a soft-soled leather shoe that looks nice on the top but has some practicality about it underneath, if you really must. If there's a topic you'd like me to cover, send an email, thecocktonation@gmail.com. And right now, Lucas Vigor with the Straight Dope.
Sexier gal, groovier gimmick, and more out-and-out guts than anything or anyone you've ever seen.
This is the Cocktail Nation.
Oh, Waikiki Beach. This is Philip Roberts, the author of Waikiki Tiki, Art, History, and Photographs, and you are listening to Cocktail Nation.
That old black magic has me in its spell. That old black magic that you weave so well. Those icy fingers up and down my spine. The same old witchcraft when your eyes meet mine. The same old tingle that I feel inside. Then that elevator starts its ride. And down I go. Round and round I go. Like a leaf caught in the tide. I should stay away, but what can I do? I hear your name and I'm aflame. Aflame with such a burning desire that only your kiss can put out the fire. Cause you're the lover I have waited for. You're the mate that fate had me created for. Every time your lips meet mine, darling, down, down I go. Round and round I go. In a spin, loving a spin on it. Under that old black magic called love.
Nation with Dave Brubeck and that old black magic. Well, it's official. The Cocktail Nation has just picked up another radio station, that is Smile 101 out of London, broadcasting on a Monday night at 10 p.m. Thanks for welcoming the Cocktail Nation to your family, Smile 101. Time for a look at the world of Swank and Ding Dong Devils are playing with the Jane Family Orchestra Sunday, February 25 at the 321 Lounge in LA. Easy Lounge every Thursday of the month. DJ Tom LG. This is over at 3255 Lakeshore Avenue in Oakland. Mr. Ho's Orchestratica on the 24th of Feb at Drom in New York. And the International Tiki Marketplace is coming up on March 4. We've got lots of vendors and Hawaiian music entertainments featuring the Smokin' Men Hoonies. This is over at Don the Beachcombers in Huntington Beach. And Clouseau playing March 30 at the Continental in Texas. Right now, George Shearing and The Shadow of Your Smile on the Cocktail Nation with Coop Cooper.
Thank you.
Rock Donation. Thanks to ultraswank.net. Hugo Montenegro with the Get Smart theme. And hi to new friends of the show via Facebook and Twitter. Hi to Bill Robertson, Ford Michaels out of Cathedral City in Palm Springs, California. And Octillo Lodge, hello to you, Jules and Sergio. Next week on the show, we catch up with author Bill Reitz, who has a new book out. Of course, the character in Bill's books, a fellow by the name of Bryce Atwell, who happens to be an Australian spy who lives in Las Vegas. And I've been reading this book almost through it. It is just absolutely superb. You're going to love this one. We'll find out more about it next week. And funny enough, the character of Bryce Atwell was actually featured in the national news just the other day. But this fellow was a guy who just lost his job at an aluminium company. I don't think it's the same Bryce Atwell, but I did actually send the audio to Bill Reitz for a bit of a giggle. Don't think it's the same guy. Let's leave you now with Henry Jerome and Moon River. Stay hip.